This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob.
Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at La Clavelle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. The course was recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members alike. La Clavelle is located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Milwaukee and Madison. Don't forget, the semi-private golf club's grand opening will be on June 20th. Yes, that's this month, June 20th. Find out more on its website at clubatlaclabelle.com. And we welcome you into Talking.Golf alongside the award-winning Gary D'Amato. This is Rob Hernandez from the award-winning Wisconsin.Golf. Gary, we cleaned up on the Milwaukee Press Club Awards, not to toot our own horn, but always good to come out on the winning end of something.
Yeah, that was pretty nice, Rob. Three awards for website design and online coverage of sports. Really good. I mean, it gives us a feather we can put in our hat, I guess, and lets people know, more people who weren't aware of us out there in journalism circles, that what we do. So I'm proud to be associated with you and other guys on our staff.
Well, and you won the award for writing and for best sports story overall. And it was Brent Bartles, right, last year at the Wisconsin State Amateur, who had been in the military, came back, and, you know, had been a competitive golfer. I covered him back in high school, I believe, at Madison La Follette, and now back playing last year. That was a really good, and especially, you know, in this area, those are good, fun stories to tell.
Yeah, Brent was in a firefight with ISIS in Africa, and lost four of his good friends, and you know, suffered some pretty serious wounds himself, and here he was playing, I believe it was about 15 years after he last played in the state amateur, teeing it up again and making the cut at Lasonia of all places. So it was a good story, really good guy, and really well liked by all the players. I could tell that a lot of guys really looked up to him in that field last year.
Well, and so again, we thank the Milwaukee Press Club for the honors and the opportunity to kind of test ourselves against other online and print publications around the state. You and I have both been in Milwaukee Press Club contests in the past, both here at, mainly, you know, you at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and me at the Wisconsin State Journal. And it's a great press club, and they do a lot of things for journalism. And I think in this day and age, we have to tip our hat to them and the efforts that they do as well. Gary, we mentioned we're sponsored by the Club at La Clavelle, and lo and behold, anybody waking up to this morning and going to Wisconsin.Golf can read all about the Club at La Clavelle, and you got a chance to play it, the whole deal. Did you get the chance to play all 18? And what did you think of it, Gary, in terms of the latest reincarnation of what you describe as a golfing treasure?
Rob, it's a really fine golf course. The redo, people might have played it in previous incarnations. It was a private club for more than 100 years. It opened in 1896, and then a couple other ownership groups bought it, turned it public. But it always had this problem with drainage. There were some peaty fairways and some soggy spots that just never really dried up. And the Morse family, Matt Morse, who owns, CEO of the Prestwick Group, Prestwick Companies based in Sussex, bought the course, renovated it, bought some land across the street, Pennsylvania Street, and routed four of the holes over there. And that enabled the architect, Craig Haltom, to get away from some of those really wet spots on the course. And it's turned into this really, really well-routed, fun, diverse course with a lot of fun holes, 007 creeping bent grass throughout, so the playing surface is going to be terrific. Little thin in spots still, you can understand that. It's brand new. But there's a great history behind the club too, Rob, with, you know, Willie Anderson, who won four U.S. Opens around the turn of the century, the turn of not this past century, but 1900. And Alex Smith from Carnoustie were early club pros. So it's got this wonderful history, which they preserved in the clubhouse with artifacts and a trophy case and replica trophies. And it's a very cool vibe to the place. I think it's going to be a very successful golf course.
So it's all part of D-Time with Gary D'Amato on our site at Wisconsin.Golf. Of course, D-Time was the course reviews series that we've been doing now for, what is this, our third year?
Second year.
And again, you travel around the state, play a lot of golf courses that, you know, a lot of our readers would like to play. And now the neat thing about the Club at La Clavelle you can play it. And especially there's a 9-hole loop open now for everybody. And starting June 20th, the full 18 will be open. Is it ready to be open? That's always the question people ask of new courses or renovated courses. It seems like it is.
It is, you know, it's very close to being in really good shape. You know, there are a few greens. Now, I played it 3 weeks before the grand opening, Rob, and 3 weeks with good weather.
Right.
A lot of time for that grass to mature a little bit more. Some of the greens were a little bit slow. No big deal. I mean, it's still a fun golf course to play, and the greens are only going to speed up through the summer here and get up to, I would imagine, you know, 10, 11 on the stimp meter by the end of the summer. But the greens have a lot of movement in them, so they don't want to get them too fast, I don't think. But yeah, it's ready to play, and it's a delight to play.
We have a lot of golf courses. Obviously, the reason for D-Time with Gary D'Amato, and then starting next week, we'll have the Hidden Gems series kicking off. Dennis McCann's going over to play Eagle River Golf Course. Again, another time-honored gen. We want to be able to, you know, everyone knows about Sand Valley. Everybody knows about Erin Hills. Everybody knows about Black Wolf Run. There's a tremendous layer of really fine golf courses, Gary, right behind that group. And in some states, those like Club at Lac La Belle would be probably an upper echelon course. And, you know, you look at some of the courses, we talk about Lasonia, we talk about Bullseye, we talk about Brown County Golf Course. There's so many golf courses in the state that golfers can play. And I mean, I guess going back, you know, 30 years, 40 years, we've really been spoiled by the quality of public golf. Of course, Century World and Stevens Point, another one you can add to that list.
Yeah, the quality of public golf has gotten better and better over the last couple decades. Century World sort of kicked off things in the early 80s when it opened as a true upscale sort of public facility, and has gotten better and better. The redo up there turned out fantastic. And you're right, Rob, there's so much good golf in our state. I think we're spoiled. And the good thing about it is, you know, there are some courses that people would have to save their money to play once a year. Know what those courses are. But there's a lot of really good courses in that, you know, $28 to $45 range that in other states and other markets might be, you know, you put some of these courses in Scottsdale, for instance, and you're charging $200 for them. So right. I'm spoiled in that respect.
So was there not to spoil the review, we want everybody to go online and read it, but was there a favorite hole that you want to talk about, a memorable hole, anything that stood out about your round?
My favorite hole probably is the par 3 fourth hole, Rob. It's the green complex is just mind-blowing. It's got this massive false front, and I played it with Tyler Morse, the general manager, and Matt Morse's son, and I asked Tyler, is that going to be part of the green? Because, I mean, it's such a huge, massive false front. It looked almost like fairway leading up to the green, and he said, you know, I'm really not sure at this point. Well, we ran into Jimmy Cabeza, the superintendent, somewhere else on the course, and we asked about that false front, and he said, yeah, that is a false front. That's how it is. But then the green has all this movement with a big ridge running through it and swales. And Matt Moore said he wanted a hole-in-one pin location. So they, in the back right of the green, they did a little punch bowl. So if the pin is back there and you hit a great shot, it's going to funnel down toward the hole. There are going to be aces in that pin position for sure. But it looks really stunning from the tee. It's about 175-yard shot from the middle tees, and just a really great-looking golf hole.
And I got to say, looking at Facebook over the weekend, as I continue, we continue to add to our hole-in-one club list. We're up over 40 holes-in-one that have either been submitted to us via email or that we've pulled from our Wisconsin.golf Facebook page and other course Facebook pages around the state. It looks really green back there in Wisconsin right now, Gary. How good are the courses and how good are the conditions at this point?
Well, I'll tell you, my lawn right now is probably as good as it's ever been. So if I can grow grass right now, I think superintendents can grow grass. Yeah, the courses are looking really good, Rob. We've had a lot of rain, but it's been fairly dry for the last couple of weeks, and everything's greened up, and everything's looking really good right now.
Well, be sure to check out Gary's review on the Club at Lac La Belle. Again, we are sponsored here each and every week on Talking.Golf by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful courses in Wisconsin. And Gary D'Amato will support that statement, ladies and gentlemen. And the course will have its grand reopening on June the 20th. So make sure and check out more at their website, clubatlaclabelle.com. Your story is one of two things that we put up there this morning. And the other that I'm really excited about is the Wisconsin.golf Senior Spotlight. For the next 15 days, 16 days, we're going to be profiling two a day most days. Sometimes we're going to have one slug, one story with three or four, because there's a couple teams that we're going to profile, all of whom had seniors that are missing desperately the high school golf season this year. And we start this morning with Mickey Keating, a state qualifier last year at a Sun Prairie High School. He shot rounds of 75 and 77 and finished in a tie for 17th. What makes Mickey unique, Gary, is he's going to UW lacrosse this fall, and he's going to swim for the Eagles. So, again, there's a lot of kids in this series that you'll read about that are multi-sport athletes that for some, golf was something to do with, you know, hanging out with a friend who, you know, really liked to golf. There's a couple questions in here that really moved the needle as I went through and formatted all these over the last few weeks. One is, what do you remember about your first high school match? And that produced a lot of great answers. And I think it's going to be a great read, especially for new golfers, new competitive golfers, because everybody has to start somewhere. And it was not easy as it looks for a lot of these kids. And the kids that you're going to read about over the next couple weeks are all kids that finished high at the state tournament or their teams did, and we're expecting big things this year. So, Gary, I thought we'd have some fun, and I thought we could compare notes on our high school golf careers. We're a different kind of senior now. So I'm going to start with, let's start with question number one that we'll be starting with here throughout the series. What was your most memorable high school golf highlight or accomplishment?
Well, actually it was a low light, Rob, but it spurred me to get better at golf. I ran track my freshman year of high school. I went out and then that summer, you know, had some buddies who played golf. They dragged me out to the golf course, and I fell in love with the sport. So instead of track, I went out for the golf team as a sophomore. And my very first JV meet, I shot a fine sterling 61 at Oakwood Park for 9 holes. And I remember I was almost in tears. I was so embarrassed, and I was on the practice putting green. And our coach, Mr. Brizzleman, came out and put his arm around me and gave me a pep talk and some words of encouragement. And that, you know, I can't say I improved a lot that year, but that helped me get through that early time of not playing very good. And it was really important, I think, for him to do that, and meant a lot to me. And so that's one of my great memories. How about you, Rob?
Well, you're talking to the Bob Uecker of high school golf, and my only varsity match was kind of by default. We had one guy that was suspended for a match for drinking. We had another young man who was suspended a match for using chewing tobacco. And then another young man who was suspended a match for harassing a teacher. So I got the call. I feel like John Daly at the PGA in 91. I got the call as the third alternate, and it was a match at Bullseye. And I went out and shot 48 on the front nine at Bullseye, which wasn't too bad. And no. But we had a pretty good team back in high school, and I thought, well, that's no way that's going to count. And I went out and shot 43 on the back. I think I came in with a 91, and I knew I was down about maybe three or four shots to a teammate at the turn. And when he came in, he had struggled mightily on the back nine, and my score counted by like a shot or two. So that was the only high school match that I played at the varsity level. I did have a lot of experiences like yours, though. I can remember the one over at Stevens Point Country Club, and I think I played JV that match, and it was I struggled back in the day with, you know, old equipment, and Stevens Point Country Club, I will always remember for having the longest par fours in the world at that age. And I just wasn't able to score. I think I shot 126 on that course in competition. So that was probably the low light, but all those things keep you coming back, doesn't it, Gary?
Yeah, for sure. We had this just real quickly. We had a kid in high school named Daryl Suzuki, who was, as a senior, about 5'6", 110 pounds. I mean, just a small little guy. Couldn't hit the ball out of his own shadow, and he grew 6 inches after high school and actually turned pro and became a mini tour player. And
wow.
I think the sectional qualifying 1 year for the U.S. Open, I mean, turned into a really fine player. But, yeah, some good memories back from high school for sure.
All right, question number two. Besides golf, Gary, what were you best known for at – you were St. Francis High School, right?
The Mighty Mariners, yeah. I wasn't known for golf. I mean, we had some pretty good players on our team. I was known for playing a lot of golf, maybe. You know what? I worked on our school newspaper, Rob, and look where it took me, right?
That's right.
Yeah, the Navigator, it was called.
The Navigator. All right, so yours is the Navigator. Mine started out at Lincoln High School in Wisconsin Rapids as the Encounter, and then when our class got a hold of it after the seniors left, we were then juniors because we were a three grade level school. We changed it to the Lincoln Log, and so I was known as the sports editor. A good buddy of mine, Craig Sampson, was the assistant sports editor. I did kind of the column called Hernando's Hideaway about the competitive sports, and then Craig did the Sammy's Den, which was more about the outdoor hunting, fishing type sports. So we complemented each other well. So that was one thing I was known for. And the other thing was I did the video and play-by-play on a videotape. I thought I was going to be the next, Jim Irwin. And I did that for all the Lincoln High School basketball games and under Coach Jack Bennett, who then went on to great success at UW-Stevens Point after following his brother Dick there. And Jack won two national titles. I don't believe Dick won a national title at Point, but he was a very good coach. And Jack always talks about that. But so I was always up in the corner of the gym at the Lincoln Fieldhouse. I had my banner and everything. It was quite a production. And then every once in a while, Jack would let the players in to listen to what I had to say. And for the most part, I was pretty good. Had a few bumps along the way, but it was a good experience. But good for what we're doing right now, in fact. So that's good. And then I wound up, because it was so popular with the basketball, then I started doing it for Wisconsin Rapids' famous wrestling program. And I'll never forget, Louis Bennett was the coach, and he asked me to come down on a non-conference dual match at Stoughton High School. And of course, Wisconsin Rapids and Stoughton, very competitive rivals in wrestling. Yeah. And that night, I'm sure you've traveled what is now I-39 through the heart of the state many times. Back then, it was I believe it was a two-lane. I don't believe it was four lanes yet. It was still Highway 51, and we were in two buses. I was in the back bus, but the front bus with many of the wrestlers. A drunk driver crossed the center line, hit the bus. The driver was killed on our way back from Stoughton. And this was somewhere around Westfield. All I know is I think we all crowded into one bus for to continue on home. But it was one of those nights where you just kind of, did that really happen? And all that because I was Mr. Media at the high school, and between between newspaper it was back in the days we had to roll the video cameras and the video players into each teacher's classroom. I mean, boy, the kids today, what they don't know about how good they have it. So, Gary, when did you get started in golf? What age and who were your early influences?
I was 15 years old. It would have been summer after my freshman year. And a couple buddies, my buddies Dave Sulik and Frank Mahuta. Frank Mahuta went on to the Air Force Academy and now is instructor in engineering at MSOE. So he's had a nice career. My friend Dave we still play golf together. And it's funny, Rob, some of the guys that you play golf with at age 15 or 16,
right.
I play with some of those guys from time to time. You hang on to those friendships. That's what golf does, right?
It sure does. My start came just before middle school because I started playing, in middle school. We had a junior high team that played at Tri-City golf course next to Bullseye Country Club in Wisconsin Rapids. But before that, I would always go out with my dad and his good friend. My dad was a pastor, then became a library director. And one of his good friends from his clergy days, the Reverend Calvin Fisher, who was our minister at the church in Wisconsin Rapids, we would go out to Homestead Supper and Country Club. And it's a nine-hole course north of town. Identifiable because of its silo next to the clubhouse. The clubhouse itself is a renovated old barn, a wonderful, kind of just straightforward, flat nine-hole course. And I would go along first before I started playing to look for golf balls that my dad would inevitably hit into the pond on number three. I always thought that was cool, collecting golf balls. And then, finally he bought me my first set. I can remember it now. In fact, I may still have a couple clubs from it. It's an old Ram junior set. And I played there and then played in junior high and then through high school. And I don't play, I've lost touch with a number of the kids on our high school team. And so I'm not like you. I haven't played with that group in many, many years. But I always like getting back and playing golf in Wisconsin Rapids. We were blessed with having some really great golf courses, starter courses like Homestead and Tri-City. And then the Ridges Golf Course, Lake Arrowhead was just getting started when I graduated back in the 80s. And then, of course, Bullseye. So in our little area, we had some pretty good golf courses.
Yeah, you know, isn't it funny, Rob, what you remember from those days? When I was maybe 16 years old and just starting to get a little better at the game, we played Grand Park almost every morning. And I started around birdie, and I can still see my shots, feel the air and the grass. And I couldn't tell you what I had for breakfast this morning, but those couple of holes where I started birdie and around many years ago, I still remember every second of that experience. It's funny what this game does.
Oh, it sure is. You talk about the smell of the grass. You know, that was one of the great things on a summer in Wisconsin. You know, I got a junior membership the 3 years I was in high school at Bullseye, and you know, I would go out there early, you know, when they were mowing the fairways, and oh, hey, you just can't beat that. It's those were the glory days, because you didn't have to go to school. You could play golf all day, and it was just a lot of fun. Gary, what do you remember about your first varsity match in high school? I've only had one, so I'll let you take that question.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. My first varsity match, I was paired with my best friend, Dave Sulik, who was the number one player on the team. And our coach thought that because we were such good friends, we'd play well together. So he put me in the number two spot. I wasn't ready for it. And Dave and I were sort of competitive with each other, and we sort of lost track of everything. And we both played poorly. And our coach never paired us together again. Even though we were good friends, we didn't play well together. So that was what I remember from my first varsity match. And I didn't play a lot. I played varsity my senior year, but only a couple times my junior year.
Yeah, and this will be a fun question for people to read as we go forward, because there's a lot of, you know, first of all, a lot of these kids have gotten their start at the Dells Invitational, which is usually on the schedule, you know, right there. Sometimes it's played, sometimes it's not, depending on how late the snow stays around in Wisconsin. And it's just fun to see how nervous they are, and then what gets them out of that little, you know, zone of nervousness. And so that'll be a fun question to check out as we continue the series. Your most influential high school teammate and why, Gary?
Well, it was my friend Dave Sulik, because we were very competitive with each other and still are. We still play golf 5 or 6 times a summer, and we still try to beat each other really, really badly. But I remembered one thing that I wanted to mention. I played the Parkland Conference JV meet as a junior, and I saved the result sheets, and I was looking at it just a couple weeks ago, and one of the names on the bottom, I beat him. Maybe the only time in my life I could ever beat him, John Haynes, the Hainer.
Wow.
Yeah, he was probably a freshman when I was a junior. He's a couple years younger than me. But my claim to fame is beating John Haynes in the Parkland Conference JV meet.
All right, and so when we post this podcast and on our Facebook page, I'm gonna tag John Haynes and tell him you might want to listen deep into the podcast to find out what Gary's talking about you. One of the questions that you and I don't need to answer, or two of them, is what did you miss most about high school golf this spring? This is the only time, Gary, I went back and looked. This is the only time in the history of WIA golf that the season has none of the season has been played. In the years where the state tournament wasn't played, back in the war years, back in the, I believe it was the Great Depression, was the only other time that they didn't play golf. They at least played the regular season. In the World War II era, they played regional championships, and that was the end of everything. They didn't come together as a state tournament. I can't imagine what this is like. And I think the one thing that I saw that I really was touched by was how much the experience itself and the van rides meant to these kids. And that's what they miss. Gary, they don't necessarily miss, you know, yeah, it was a privilege to play the Mac Fund Open tournament at Erin Hills that Heartland Arrowhead put together, and all these other great courses they play. But just the simple act of getting to a van and traveling, whether it's a half hour, 2 hours, whatever it might be, is what they miss. And I guess, you know, looking back at it, you know, that was the camaraderie was what set golf apart. You and I have played hundreds of rounds since our high school days, but it's being with other kids your age, same interests, your friends, that makes it special.
Yeah, Rob, it's really unfortunate that the pandemic has taken away that chance for those seniors to experience that one more time. And you're right, the competition is important, and for a lot of these guys, it's really important. But I think for the vast majority of high school golfers, it's all about the experience. It's all about being with your teammates, having fun, doing goofy things in the van rides, and when you stop for fast food. And that's the things that, those guys and girls are going to remember when they're 40, 50, and 60 years old. It's not that they shot a 38 in a meet or a 70. Right. It's that they had a blast playing with friends.
And we also had asked the question, what did you miss most about not going to school for classes this spring? You know, with a lot of them, I mean, again, these are seniors who not only miss the experience of being in, you know, in the hallways with their friends each day, but, you know, legitimately missed a lot of what the teachers have meant, because I think they're finding that a teacher's job is not as easy as some of them make it look. And certainly the experience of learning at home has been very difficult for many of these kids. And so that's been, you know, a little bit of a hardship there. And then, Gary, the stuff that you and I were able to enjoy, you know, our senior prom and, you know, senior, some people call it senior skip day. It's a senior class trip. My son is missing a senior class trip to Universal Studios, a full day that where they leave early in the morning and they get the park to themselves after it closes at 9, and then they hop on the bus about midnight. And there's a lot of that stuff. I always laughed. I played golf one time at Lasonia on the links course and looked across the fairway and to another hole, and there was John Turcotte and all of his buddies from the great Middleton golf teams of his era, and they weren't there for a regional, they weren't there for a sectional, they were there for their senior class day in Green Lake at the Green Lake Conference Center. But they let the guys who wanted to play golf go play golf. I tell you what, that's one class trip I would have loved to have been on.
I can just imagine. I can just imagine, Rob. Yeah, I didn't have a class trip like that, but my buddies and I from our golf team would go in the summer and play at Lasonia and pitch tents and find a farmer's cornfield on a two-lane road and pitch tents and play golf all day. And those are the things you remember, as we said, for sure.
And the last question that we've asked these kids that you'll learn about is what their plans are for this fall. Gary, many of them are going on to college. Some are going right into the workforce, which again is, you know, is great. I think everybody, you know, needs to do what is comfortable for them. You and I were lucky; we got to go off to college. You played in college, didn't you, for at least a year? I did not. Tell us about your college experience.
Well, that's another funny story, Rob. I have the sheet that proves I was on the UW Whitewater men's golf team my freshman year. I did not ever play in a match. I was the last guy on the team. Jeff Hosking was on that team. We joke about that from that time to time. Maxwell Hosking's father. There were some really good players on that team. Pat Worthy, Ray Jack, some really good names that you
know. Oh yeah,
yeah. But I never played in a match. I somehow qualified. I think Coach Don Voller felt sorry for me and put me on the team as the last guy. But I never played, and I didn't go up for the team as a sophomore. I was way over my head. So that was that.
Don must have known that you were going to write about his son, Mark, from time to time. So he said, I better take good care of this D'Amato guy. So that's awesome.
That was probably it.
Well, those are the 9 questions we asked. It's a quick 9. It was a lot quicker to read than it was for us to talk about. But I tell you what, you know, that's what golf is all about, storytelling. And those are some great times for both you and me, Gary. And so I'm glad that we gave these kids an outlet to just at least review. And a lot of, I mean, honestly, every time I got a response back from one of these kids, it was with a thank you, because it was therapeutic for them to be able to relive memories that they hope to, you know, add on to this year. But it made them, you know, understand and appreciate really how much they did gain from, you know, 2, 3, sometimes, you know, years of high school golf. And unfortunately, the fourth year not to be this year. And this would have been the week of regionals, next week sectionals, and then the 15th and 16th at University Ridge would have been the state tournament. And Gary, I mentioned before we came on the podcast, this would also have been the week of the AmFam championship. It's just crazy what we're, you know, what's on the board and what's not on the board so far this golf season.
That shocked me, Rob, when you mentioned that it was AmFam week. I mean, that hadn't even entered my mind. I'm barely thinking about tournament golf at this point. Hopefully, we're going to get into some tournaments. We had one last week, the WPGA Pro Spring Tournament. But, yeah, tournament golf is – we know it's out there, but it hasn't arrived yet for the most part. And hopefully, we're going to have a semi-normal season once we start playing tournament golf.
Well, I talked on the my conversation last week with Neil Johnson about what he liked and didn't like about the way tournament golf is being played on the Outlaw Tour. Tell me a little bit about what you saw at the WPGA event last week that was different, and whether you think it can extend in other tournaments, both that the WPGA puts on and the WSGA and the other providers around the state here as we go into the summer schedule?
That's a good question. I think the way the WPGA handled things last week in their tournament at Meadowbrook Country Club in Racine is probably going to be a template for how it's handled for most, if not all, of this season at least, and who knows, maybe even in succeeding seasons of tournament golf. But yeah, the main differences, Rob, were, you know, the scoring area. Everyone knows there's a tent. You come off the ninth or 18th hole, and you go to a scoring table. The competitors sit down at the table, exchange scorecards, attest them, sign them, and go over their scores and any ruling issues they might have had. That was all gone. I mean, Chris Hole, the assistant executive director of the WPGA, sat at a table, but he had been getting live scoring from everyone's phones. Everyone's keeping score on their phones. And so the competitors would stand about 10 feet away from with their phones in hand, and Chris would read back the scores that they were feeding him throughout the round just to double check that they got everything right. And so there's no signing of scorecards, no exchanging of paper of any kind. That looked different. And then single riders in the golf carts. As Jimmy Gauger said, it's not quite as social a game when you're playing it that way, because everyone scatters and is spread apart. But other than that, it looked like a regular golf tournament to me.
It'll be interesting because I did talk to Andy Landenberger late last week. He sent out an update on the WPGA Junior Tour. At least 8 events are full, and they're getting ready to implement many of the same things that you were describing. I think I don't know if they'll have the kids actually keeping score on a phone or not, or if they'll just simply have them hand them a scorecard, keep their own score, and then, you know, turn it in without getting too close to anyone or anything after the round. But they're actually going to send out those clarifications this week, so it'll be interesting to see what they say. But he did say that one of the reasons for the full fields is because they've had to reduce the size of the field. Normally it can accommodate 108 kids at each site. They're down in between 88 and 94 at most sites. A couple of them that are kind of shorter, tighter courses where there may be some backups on tees, they've reduced the field even further. But we're going to get going here pretty quick. And again, you know, some of our touring professionals have played in our plane on these tours, and I talked to Neil Johnson. The one thing, Gary, that came out of our conversation that I thought was interesting is this pool noodle at the bottom of the cup. And there, he played with it in. I assume they did last week too?
They did, yes. No one touched the flag sticks. The flags were in, and the pool noodle was in the cup.
And Neil said that, you know, Chris Hole that you referenced from the WPGA, one of his jobs is to set up the course. That's, you know, Bill Linneman's job at the WSGA and others. And, you know, and traditionally that's, you know, you go mark the course, you establish where the lateral hazards are, the red stakes, the yellow stakes, all that stuff, where you're going to set the tees, where you're going to set the pins. Well, now another thing that has to be, you got to make sure that you're going to have that pool noodle cut to the right spec to be able to make sure that there's no chance that ball is going to hop in and hop back out. And Neil even thought that perhaps both, governing bodies might actually have their own pool noodles that they put in the 18 holes just to make sure they're cut to the right spec so that there is no gray area there. The things you got to think about in this new COVID-19 era of running tournament golf.
Yeah, there should be some uniformity to that for sure, for the pool noodles in the cup. I had an incident, I won't say where I played, but I played a couple weeks ago, and I got foamed, Rob. My definitely went in the hole, and it bounced on the foam and bounced out on the other side of the hole. I didn't count it as a made putt, obviously, because it didn't go in the hole, but I know in my heart of hearts that putt was in the hole. So we were joking throughout the round that the expression was, you got foamed. So we're going to have to watch that. That actually could happen to people in competitive environments.
Well, when I was watching Neil on one of the live streams from the Outlaw Tour, he lipped out a putt that almost looked like he got foamed. And, you know, just looking at the way on that stream, the way his finger wasn't going too far deep into the cup, but I couldn't see the ball when it would go into the hole area. And so I knew it was cut deep enough, but, there is a fine line there between, you know, getting foamed and having it just kind of be that buffer between, you know, the bottom of the cup and where your fingers would pick the ball out of the hole. Something to look forward to. Speaking of Neil Johnson, Gary, he's playing the last event on the Outlaw Tour for this current schedule, the Lone Tree Classic in Chandler, Arizona. And as we record our podcast, 6 under through 15 holes and tied for second. His entry fee into this tournament was paid by someone who made a little money off of him on DraftKings. And that's another thing where these mini tours are really thriving here in the COVID-19 area while we wait for the PGA Tour to resume. They've gotten involved with some of the gambling websites, and people are actually wagering money on guys on this tour. And somebody won something on Neil last week, and so they decided to pay the, I can't remember what it was, $600, $700 entry fee. Pretty cool story.
That is very cool. And you're right, Rob. Once the PGA Tour starts up again, there's going to be proposition betting on, as rounds are going, is Phil Mickelson, who's in the middle of the fairway, is he going to hit the green from 230 yards? I mean, there's going to be prop betting on all that stuff. And it's really going to be interesting to follow how the tour handles all this. I think it's a fascinating topic.
Well, and I told Neil at the end of our chat last week that my only recommendation for him is that they get one of those carts that they use at the match between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson that's souped up with all these cameras. I think that would be wonderful for doing the mobile streams of these mini tours, and then get Brent Musburger to be in the cart for the play-by-play because nobody likes to put money on something regarding sports better than Brent Musburger. Do they, Gary?
No, he is the king, so to speak, isn't he, of betting?
Neil thought that Brent Musburger would know everything there is to know about anybody in the field. That's how good he is, and it is a new era, and I guess we're going to see more of it because more and more states are letting this happen. So we'll have to see where that goes from here. Gary, I think our trip down memory lane took us pretty much to the end of our podcast. I thank you for your time here today, and we'll do this again next week.
It's fun, Rob. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Talking.Golf, which is sponsored each and every week by the Club at Lac La Belle, one of the oldest and most beautiful golf courses in Wisconsin. You can read all about the Club at Lac La Belle on our website at Wisconsin.Golf. Gary played it last week, and it is the inaugural D-Time with Gary D'Amato feature of the 2020 season right now on our site. And, of course, the Club at Lac La Belle, recently restored and recreated for a unique golf experience for both members and non-members alike. Lac La Belle, located in Oconomowoc, a convenient distance between Madison and Milwaukee. The semi-private golf club will hold its grand opening June 20th. They've got a 9-hole loop open for everyone right now. You can find out more on its website at club@laclabelle.com. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, we'll talk golf again next week.